You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where each episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die. This episode, we'll be talking about Sonic Youth, Dirty. In the room, I have Rob.
Hey, buddy.
And on the line, I have Ben.
Zoftig Chick is mine.
And Kyle.
Howdy.
Dirty is the seventh full-length studio album by the American rock band Sonic Youth. It was released on July 21st, 1992 by DGC Records. The producer was Butch Vig and Sonic Youth. And the genre is noise rock, alternative rock, experimental rock, and grunge. I'm going to read from the book, Ignacio Julia. Dirty was Sonic Youth's closest shot at grunge mainstream. It was a crowning feat of sorts, a classic recording for anybody interested in the indie revolution in rock that started at the end of the 80s. The album still resonates with undulating electricity, natural coolness, spiraling words, and a sharp world vision. Recorded in Manhattan's Magic Shop by Butch Vig, the producer responsible for Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit, this collection shows New York's catalysts of noise rock coming to terms with their own sonic history. Traces of conceptual art, hardcore punk, and left-field experimentation severed in a cohesive, articulate fashion while delivering a rock sound that they would only occasionally recreate so vividly and effectively. Singers, guitarists Thurston Moore and Lee Ronaldo, elaborate, rich soundscapes and petrifying riffs that go from dreamy to aggressive, while bass player Kim Gordon tries out different voices that range from feminist wrath to the rough sweetness of Final Scene Creme Brulee. Not forgetting the imaginative contributions of drummer Steve Shelley, or the fact that the strength of alternative rock hits like 100% and Sugarcane made the album a landmark. Like all their subsequent albums, Dirty documents a band as faithful to its own multifaceted personality as to the events of the time, mixing the personal and social and stimulating layers of sound and fury. All right, what do we think of Sonic Youth's Dirty?
It's fucking great. Awesome.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece. Right. Come on.
Yeah, amazing. You guys know what I think.
Yeah, we do.
I think it smells like Butch Vig is what I think you think.
Yeah, it does. It does.
Is this the only album that Butch Vig did?
He did
for Sonic Youth?
Yeah, I think he... That is. I don't think...
Because this album sounds incredible.
Yeah. The next one, Experimental Jet Set. No, he did Experimental Jet Set.
Okay, I do like that record too.
Yeah. Yeah,
we've got a Spike Jonze music video on this one, though. He directed the video for 100%.
Yep.
Hell yeah.
It's basically him on a skateboard with a camera skating around filming Jason Lee. Yep.
Great. This was like perfect timing for Sonic Youth. I mean, they had just got to the big leagues, and here comes, they're on tour with... 1991, they're on tour with Nirvana. Does Smells Like Teen Spirit. Guess what? Huge.
Also, Dinosaur Jr. was on that tour too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And then... Wow.
The year punk broke, baby.
That's it. Yeah. As soon as that happened, then they were like, oh, let's push Sonic Youth. Like, anybody on that tour, they were just like, however much money you want, let's just make this happen. Make another Nirvana. But ironically, they went with Butch Vig because he did some really obscure, like, experimental band that they really liked. I'm blanking on the name right now, but they didn't do it because Nirvana had just recorded with him. They just liked him and thought he could do a good job.
Huh.
Yeah. I always thought it was because of Nirvana, but they were just like, no.
Was it some anarchist Toronto band?
Oh, Birch Mecht Mensch.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
Have you checked them out? Are they good?
I've not checked them out. Probably good.
This album was a blind spot for me.
What?
Please listen to me, Rob. I have several Sonic Youth records that I bought as a teenager and in my 20s. I have Experimental Jet Set, Trash No Star. I've got
Washing Machine.
Goo.
Washing Machine.
Hell yeah.
Daydream Nation.
Mm-hmm.
This one, I guess I just never picked up. I know I heard
this was
it.
Is it because there's a hacky sack on the front? You're like, no.
No, that was the thing.
That was a draw for me.
when I saw this was next up, I was like, oh, I know that record, Dirty Boots. And I was thinking of Goo.
Yeah.
And then I put it on. Like, I was like, oh, shit, I've never heard this.
Oh, man, it's wonderful.
Yeah. It was great. It was like finding a new classic fucking album. This is amazing. This was like a treat for me because it was right between like the Sonic Youth albums that I love.
Yeah.
And I had just never checked it out. Like I'd seen some of this stuff live, you know, on their videos and stuff. But yeah, this was awesome.
This was the only one that I had back in the day.
Wow.
I got this one at the same used CD store where I got Automatic for the People. I think it was the same shopping trip.
Nice.
Wow.
And I didn't know what Sonic Youth sounded like, but for $6, I was willing to learn. I liked some of the stuff on it. I think I was a little bit young. My ears were a little young for some of the stuff, but I was really intrigued by it. And I really wanted to figure it out. I wanted to get to it. And I've actually got an anecdote about this album. So the year is 2000. My mom is driving a minivan with her firstborn in it to college.
Wait, you are the firstborn, right?
Yeah,
it's
me.
It's not a secret. Yeah, other
no, sorry. For people listening to this that don't know me personally, it's me. My mom's driving me to college.
This is a riddle.
I was firstborn, and I was riding shotgun, so I've got free reign of the CD player. And I was playing CDs, and I put on Sonic Youth "Dirty," and I was just kind of jamming to it. And so, you know, Kim Gordon's her lead vocals can be a bit of an acquired taste.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They still are for me, and at the time it definitely was for me. But like I really like some of like the guitar work and like the noise and the drums. So I'm sitting in the minivan listening to Sonic Youth, and the song "Shoot" comes on track 5. "Shoot," where Kim Gordon is just like slur belching her way through a verse, you know, like trying to make it sound bad, like just bad. And my mom just starts laughing. She's laughing about how bad the singer is. And I say, no, 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 shut up. Just listen right here, just like I would to one of my friends. But this was not one of my friends. This was my mom.
You actually told Barb to shut up?
It slipped out.
Her boys feared a tread.
And you know, and she's halfway through a drive. But taking taking me like for the first time, like away from home, whatever. I'm like, oh no, shut up, listen to this. And she just starts crying.
Oh, no.
And for like a while after that, I had trouble listening to Dirty by Sonic.
Oh, that's a sweet story.
That's amazing.
It's like when Rob got in a car wreck listening to Lita Ford.
Went to a party last Saturday night. Didn't get laid. Got in a fight. Got in a car wreck.
Got in a car wreck. It'll be all right.
I hit Samuel Spatafor, and he said, "I seen you back there smoking and joking with your friends." And I can't unhear that.
Man, that's amazing.
Yeah.
What a fucking record.
This album rules.
Birch, where would you put this? You're the Sonic Youth guy. Where would you put this with your favorite Sonic Youth records?
Yeah, it's up at the top. It's up at the top, for sure.
What is the tippy top?
I mean, that's the thing is, tippy top, the problem is that there's so many good ones right in a row that you can take your pick.
Yeah.
I thought Daydream and Goo were like the... the top two. And then I heard this one. I was like, oh, shit.
Yep. It kind of depends on what you're looking to get out of Sonic Youth, to tell you the truth. If you're looking for more indie experimental, you probably go with Daydream. If you're looking for a dirty recording and funner, you know, kind of fun songs, you go with Goo. If you're looking for nice, clean polish and rock songs, but still have a bit of chaos in them, but don't stretch on past 5-ish minutes, you probably go with Dirty.
Yeah.
If you're looking to go a little more experimental and still clean and polish, you go with Experimental Jet Set. And it just, you know, that's, I think, why I love them so much is every time you can, like, put it on and just think, oh, I get something out of this. I get something out of this. Like, you were talking about how you really liked early stuff, too. Like, mm-hmm. Evil and Sister. You're like, oh, Sister's, like, the best. Because it's, like, SST, right? It's, like, punk rock. Yeah. And this still has that attitude, but at the same time, so good. I was re-listening to it this week, and I was thinking, what do I get out of this? Like, what is the draw for me? And I think it really is, I love a surprise. I like to be surprised, whether it's a movie, whether it's an album, and whatever. And Sonic Youth will just do that in a song.
Mm-hmm.
Like the ending of Swimsuit Issue, it'll just, like, slow down. And she's like, swimming. And she's almost saying, like, women at the, you know, saying swimming. And it's crazy. Like, who does these? Like, they just go in these directions that seem to branch out. But at the same time, I'm here for it. I just want to follow them and see where it goes every time.
Yeah, not all art school kids get to be this good.
Yeah, very true.
Because I've seen the other side of the coin.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Man, it stinks.
Yeah, well said. Yeah.
But yeah, this is just, they're just incredible. And I blame mostly Lee Ronaldo.
Why?
I don't know. I just wanted to say.
Blame him for what?
Wait, is Lee Ronaldo, is he the drummer or is he the guitarist?
No, Steve Shelley.
No,
Steve Shelley, my bad. Yeah. Steve Shelley coming in, like, I think is the reason why the band, like,
oh, absolutely.
Exploded. Yeah, my bad.
Yeah.
This is at his confidence high because they brought him in. Goo was, like, still in that area where you're trying to figure out how to, you know, fit in with the band and everything. This is, like, full on. He knows exactly what he can play over these people creating chaos.
Yeah.
And I just, he is, like, the backbone of this band, and I will never speak highly enough of him, of just how do you, like, make this sound when you have two guitarists and Kim and they're all going crazy, like, somehow.
He's like being a director or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can never.
Or an editor. I don't, yeah.
Figure it out. So great, though.
Such an unassuming looking dude, too. He doesn't look like he's an artsy rock band. Like, he looks like he's on his way to band camp.
Yeah.
He knows what he's doing. Sonic Youth eventually signed a 5-album deal with Geffen, estimated $300,000. They were disappointed when they realized it would not be on Geffen, but it would be on DGC.
Which is what everyone
Which
was
is
on.
What all the grunge albums, like, were on. Because it somehow, I don't know, they wanted that label, sub-label, to be the sort of, like, grunge label.
Back in the 90s, I didn't know anything about Geffen, but I knew, like, some of my favorite CDs were on DGC.
Yeah. So just a stable for all of these, like, grunge acts.
Yep. Late summer 1991, we talked about Nirvana, Dinosaur Jr., Babes in Toyland, and Gumball were on, along with Sonic Youth, were on that tour. They premiered Orange Rolls, Angel Spit, and Chapel Hill, both of which would appear on this album. But obviously that's in the documentary, 1991, The Year Punk Broke, by Dave Markley.
A worthy watch if ever there was one.
Yeah, pretty great.
Yeah, yeah. I guess I assumed everybody listening would have already seen it, but if you haven't, yeah. It's an incredible documentary. It's like a flashpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You can, like, skip the first 5 minutes. It is just Thurston Moore spinning around in a circle with a video camera. But after that, it's fucking great.
Is that where he's talking about the grunge pedal?
No. It's before it. It's like he's by some railroad tracks. All of a sudden, Kurt Cobain comes in. He's got a flower in his teeth. It's fucking weird.
Sweetheart.
Yeah.
Fucking weird.
Mm-hmm.
You guys know the tragic story of Joe Cole?
No.
Yeah, go ahead and tell it, though.
Joe Cole, he's Black Flag's roadie and Henry Rollins' best friend and roommate. One night, Henry Rollins and Joe Cole were coming home to their L.A. house after a whole show, and they were robbed at gunpoint. The robbers were very disappointed that between the two of them, they only had $50. Henry Rollins went into the house to get more money, and the robbers shot Joe Cole in the face. Jesus. Joe Cole died right there on the ground. Henry Rollins keeps a jar of the blood-soiled soil around, and there's multiple songs on this album that are about Joe Cole. 100% and JC are both about Joe Cole. He was just one of those dudes. He meant a lot to a lot of people, mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, he was just one of those dudes that he just really resonated with anyone that was around him. And when news of his death passed around, like, the rock world, you'd be surprised how many people were, like, doing tributes to him and stuff like that. Yeah, and then in the music video for 100%, they allude to it. It's not about it, but, like, there's a scene where, like, Brandon Lee, like, under, like a body cloth laying on the grass and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Brandon Lee, the...
Sorry, Jason
the crow?
Lee.
Oh,
yeah. No, not the crow. Yeah. Not the crow, Jason Lee.
But, yeah, that was, it was... dedicated to his memory, also self-titled Rollins Band and debut.
Live Through This. Live Through This. Yeah.
Are dedicated to him too. Yeah. Super sad and super, but it's just, interesting that they picked up on a lot of things.
100% was a song that Thurston wrote about it, and JC was a song that Kim wrote about it. Strangest thing, so they never solved the crime. And I remember back in the 90s, before I knew who many of these scene people were, but I knew who Henry Rollins was just because he's got, I think I'd seen the video for Liar, and it's very memorable. And I remember it was like, I was watching just like Unsolved Mysteries, like just like on regular, and they were covering that story. And I remember, like, I was like, wait, Unsolved Mysteries is interviewing the guy from the Rollins Band. And they were talking about it. It was very surreal.
Yeah.
Seeing Henry Rollins on Unsolved Mysteries talking about his buddy. One last thing about that story. Rollins thinks that so apparently the week before it happened, Rick Rubin showed up at their place, and he rolled up in a Rolls Royce, parked his Rolls Royce outside and went in. And at that meeting, Henry Rollins was like, oh man, people are going to see that Rolls Royce out front. They're going to think there's money in here. Like, this place is going to get popped. And like, it was like within a week that's what happened.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Since we're talking about songs and song meanings and stuff, I got a couple here that I thought I'd mention. Swimsuit Issue is about then current Geffen employee who was reprimanded to therapy for sexual harassment, hence the lyrics, "Don't touch my breasts, I'm just working at my desk." And then the last section of the song features Gordon naming all of the models in the March 1992 Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. The lyrics to Drunken Butterfly were taken wholly from song titles and lyrics of Heart songs. And the track was originally titled Barracuda after the Heart song. The final title was taken from Heart song, Dog and Butterfly.
Which sounds like Drunken Butterfly.
Yeah. Sugar Cane is about Marilyn Monroe. Chapel Hill is one of the first songs written for the album, alongside with Orange Rolls and Angel Spit, about the town of Chapel Hill, North Carolina. And
there's a tragedy in that one, too.
Yeah, and the 1991 murder of bookseller of Bob Sheldon.
Yeah, he was an activist and, you know, unsolved, but CIA.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what is Youth Against Fascism about, George?
Yeah. Who could tell?
What's that one?
Yeah, I could never tell.
What are the hidden meanings?
That really gets stuck in my head a lot.
Yeah.
Just the song I hate. It's a song I hate. I Believe Anita Hill.
I Believe Anita Hill. That judge will rot in hell.
He's getting woke.
Yeah, that's... It's just like... It just has a lot of what going on for it.
Yep. Man, have you guys seen the music video for Sugarcane?
Mm-hmm.
The Marc Jacobs grunge fashion show.
Yep.
I guess Marc Jacobs was like tight with Thurston and Kim, and he's like, hey, I'm doing a grunge fashion line. Y'all should play. And they're like, all right.
Sometime, come over. We'll smoke and watch all Sonic Youth videos. Everybody.
Okay.
I'm in. Yeah. I'm in.
I don't know if you can buy it anymore, but there's a DVD of like called The Collection, just Sonic Youth videos. They're all great. Even the one for Goo is just them dancing around to one of those little portable record players. Yeah. And it's just like Kim in a funny dress, and they're just like dancing in their living room and singing along to the Goo. It's really good.
I remember in the early 2000s, like I spent so much money on getting like DVD sets of bands, dude, like you and me music both, videos man. And stuff. And I'm like, what a great investment. And then YouTube came out in like 2005. I was like, oh, shit.
No, man, that's not as good as quality, though.
Nope.
Yeah.
If as you DVD?
Still, no, it's not. Trust me. There's plenty that I've been on a kick recently to find the best quality of like music videos. And those are usually like super compressed. They don't take like DVD quality. There are some like Thriller that they remastered and, you know, like.
It's whatever. Fine for a computer screen. Doesn't yeah. do much on a larger.
Yeah, if you look at it on a big screen, it just
no. I used to have those director's collection DVDs, like the Spike Jonze and the Chris Cunningham and the Michelle Gondry. And Rob, when we were living together on Breckenridge, there was someone that like we met at Seidenfaden's, and we hung out with him like a few times, and I brought over my DVDs once. And then we decided, like, we just didn't want to hang out with him anymore. And I cut my losses. I never got those DVDs back.
All right. We'll get you those. Sounds like a birthday present.
But speaking of music videos, weren't there, like, some fan-created videos for this album?
Yeah, it was for...
120 Minutes.
Yeah, was it Sugar Cane?
There was one for Drunken Butterfly. Mm-hmm. And but also Swimsuit Issue and Nick Fit also have fan videos. Yeah.
So when they started creating this, the band sent a series of cassette tapes to Vig late 1991 with the new compositions. He was pleased but also uncertain. The tapes consisted of long instrumentals, and the producer was unable to discern the song structures. Of course. The second batch of cassettes that Vig received demonstrated that the band had performed some self-editing with its compositions. And then Vig moved to New York City for 3 months, early 1992, and the band began recording at the Magic Shop in March. Ian McKay of Fugazi contributed guest guitar on Youth Against Fascism. And then I think his
little brother
played on Nick Fit, which is a cover.
That's the hardcore song, right?
Yes. Yeah. It just sounds like this.
Was Butch Vig producing bands before he was the drummer for Garbage, or was he the drummer for Garbage before he was producing bands?
Oh, he was producing way before.
Oh, really? So they just got, I guess I don't know the Butch Vig story.
The Garbage story is really interesting.
Was he like their producer and also drummer, or did he meet them a different way?
Garbage is a bunch of producers.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Garbage is a bunch of producers and Shirley Manson.
Yeah. I'd heard that before and I'd forgotten that.
Yeah. That's why it sounds
hundreds of overdubs.
Fucking spectacular.
Yeah, we'll get to it.
Yeah.
I saw them on that tour with the Smashing Pumpkins.
Smashing Pumpkins.
Oh, no, Melancholy and the Infinite Garbage, what I'm saying.
They were touring off their first record.
That Smashing Pumpkins. That was the last show with the guy from the Frogs.
We got to stop this.
I know. I don't know why I made that face or that noise. I am so sorry.
We are very cool, though.
Let's talk a little bit about... So the wake of Nirvana's success... I still can't emphasize how big Nirvana's Nevermind was. Like, it is in the stratosphere.
Yeah, to be there.
Like, yeah. It just,
they unseated the king of pop. His follow-up to Bad.
I mean, when...
A garage band from Seattle unseated Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Sure beats Raising Cattle.
Hey.
But in the success, in the wake of that success, DGC pushed this album very heavily. Geffen executive Mark Cates admitted, quote, was not a great radio song for 100%. He said, however, the song was popular on alternative and college radio, reaching number 4 on the Billboard Alternative Songs, number 28 on the UK Singles Chart. In September, the band appeared on Late Night with David Letterman, performing 100%. At the urging of Kate's, Youth Against Fascism was released in December as the album's second single. The single did not sell well or receive airplay.
You don't say.
Though it did chart number 52 in the UK, and Kate's referred to the decision as, quote, one of the biggest professional mistakes of my life.
Wow. But it's like, you never know. You know, it's like Pork Soda was huge.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm sure these guys didn't have a clue. They were just kind of chasing the...
Exactly. Man, I would have put 100% on the radio.
We're still in the Bush administration right now, right? Bush won?
Yeah.
Or mm-hmm. Clinton doesn't come until the next year.
Clinton's, yeah, he starts off 93, I believe. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That means they were put actively pushing the, like, Anita Hill thing, like, in the fucking... Republican led everything at that point.
That yeah, shit no. sucked, yeah. Yes.
It still sucks.
Still sucks.
Anyways, where are we now?
We are on Orange Rolls, Angel Spit.
Ah, that's a great song.
It is.
Every song's great, though.
Every song.
Every fucking song.
I'm sorry. I'm just shook. This is like a buried treasure to discover this album in my early 40s. Like, with that production, like, yeah. And that passion and the, yeah, this is...
I'm curious, do you guys have a favorite writer of the group? Obviously, Thurston does the more, what would you say, alternative punky stuff. Lee does like wish fulfillment.
I love Teresa's, Kim Gordon stuff, dude.
And Kim, yeah, Kim also has.
I think she writes incredible shit.
Okay.
Yeah. Lee Ronaldo's my dude.
What tracks on this album are Lee Ronaldo tracks?
Wish fulfillment.
Teresa's Sound World. He also did Genetic.
What track list are you looking at? Mine wins with Creme Brulee.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no, Creme Brulee.
Yeah, sorry, that was left off. Sorry.
Yeah, Wish Fulfillment's the only one on the actual release that is a Ronaldo. Right.
I think at this juncture, right. I like the Thurston Moore songs.
I mean, it's like picking between favorite Beatles.
It is. It's like everyone has a great sense of what they're contributing.
But whose solo work do you like better? I'm a Free Kitten man myself.
Yeah, she's pretty good.
She's great.
Lee's also good. I mean, I like a lot of his stuff. And the first Thurston Moores after they broke up were also pretty tight. Actually, they're still a band when he did some solo albums, too.
God, Kim's voice is so good. I'm sorry. Like
no, shut up.
Yeah, just hearing Kim and her... in her prime on some of these tracks I'd never heard before, or I heard, you know, at a party or something, but to study them this past week has been fucking great.
Yeah.
Ben, please text your mother that you've had a sense memory from when you made her cry on your way to college off of a record that you're listening to right now. She'll probably laugh at this point.
Yeah. I'll reach out to her.
Yeah.
It's been 23 years. Damn, I'll reach out.
I've got nothing but praise for this, man.
Yeah. Singles were, of course, 100%. Youth Against Fascism, Sugarcane, then Drunken Butterfly. I think that's totally solid.
Completely.
Especially if you're trying to cater to people who might be into Nirvana.
Mm-hmm.
Like, starting off with 100%.
Telling you, man, that's such a good lead-off track.
Yeah. It really is.
Video for Youth Against Fascism is in the Terminator 2 scene... the LA River, where like the motorcycle semi truck chase happens. That's where they shoot it. Just like the concrete drainage area.
It also have
it's also where Repo Man has the chase.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Rabbit's also where they filmed that reality show, The Colony.
I remember. They filtered water out of that fucking mug and drank sure it with did. Their mouths.
They sure did.
Notable on this, too, is this is the first album to mark the appearance of three guitars on a few Sonic Youth songs.
Oh, wow. And it doesn't sound muddy at all.
No.
Nope.
It sounds great.
Butch Vig, man.
Yeah, he's... I remember being younger and like getting into like album production and just, god damn.
I feel like I remember at the time too, people being like, it's a little clean for them. It's a little like,
why did you guys sign to Geffen?
Yeah.
Be honest, at 12 years old, I didn't hear anybody saying anything about this record. Yeah.
This record is literally dirty.
Yeah. I was still listening to Prince's Seven on the school bus.
Dude, that was
so. Is that actually a hacky sack on the cover?
No, it's like a crochet. It's like a crocheted doll.
Yeah. Okay, that's what I thought it was. I was just making sure I hadn't been looking at it long for 30 years.
The process in making that doll is the same process that you would do to make a hacky sack.
Tell me more.
Crochet a circle and fill it with beans.
It checks out.
That's all I got.
For you UK people, a hacky sack is known as foot bag.
Oh.
In your neck of the woods.
It's called goofle ball.
Did anybody ever get in a hacky sack?
Yeah, man.
I tried.
I was just a little turd out there.
Absolutely terrible.
I got decent around eighth grade.
Yeah. Should we bring it back? Show these.
When you guys played hacky sack, did dreadlocks just appear on the top of your head?
When we get done with this,
in my mind, I was hacky sacking in slow motion in the "Say It Ain't So" music video.
Yeah,
I saw literally the biggest pair of JNCOs I've seen in my life 3 days ago, and I took a picture of it. I'm going to show it to you. So yes, we are primed for hacky sacks to come back now.
I can't wait.
Okay. Should we make some 1001 album club? Yeah, there we go. Sell them on a non-existent merch site.
This album makes me happy that I'm doing this podcast with you, my friends.
Yeah.
This has been a treat to have to study this album.
So when I put on Sonic Youth late at night and make you listen to it, Kyle, I never put on Dirty.
Never.
What was I putting on?
I mean, you were putting on, like, I told you the handful of records I had. You were putting on, like, the older stuff and the later stuff.
Okay.
Maybe a little Thousand Leaves or something.
I mean, I'll put it all on.
Yeah,
I am a little disappointed we don't get any more, as is Rob, because we don't get to talk about Bull in the Heather.
I know.
A very formative video for Rob Ross.
Always it's a formative video for all of us.
Kathleen Hanna. Yeah, I had a little sexual awakening watching that.
The prettiest person I ever saw on a TV screen.
And she might rub up against you if you play in a band.
No. She's also like the coolest person I've ever talked to in person. Yep.
She's very cool.
So fucking cool.
Yep.
Let's have her on the show.
We love you, Kathleen.
Yeah.
I thought that Kelly Deal was the coolest person you ever talked to in person.
You guys are awesome. The coolest person I've ever talked to was Clint Howard.
Oh, shit. I just waved at him. I couldn't afford an autograph.
10 years ago this week.
Yeah, he was at a horror con about 5 years ago down here.
I am disappointed, too, that, you know, this is it. I do feel like there is something in some of the later albums that is not quite represented here.
That could maybe push fucking Stereo MCs out of the limelight.
I won't say that.
There's something to be said that I think Sonic Youth is coming in like second
very
to like the
heavy,
most records like of a band.
Yep.
Like in here. So, and yeah, I could
okay,
do
that's
it.
Fair.
I could do with more, but I mean they have been. We've seen their output and we've seen the growth. Like the story has been told, and honestly, this is going out on a fucking high note, man. Like,
yeah, you're right.
It's not as if something gets exponentially better from here. It's not that it goes down in quality, I don't think, but I don't think this gets topped.
Yeah, okay, I could see that. It's a good point.
I mean, I want more, but
yeah. Yeah, if I were to put on more recent ones, I would do Rather Ripped or Murray Street.
Okay.
Those are the Murray Street for just like midlife, middle age sort of like Sonic Youth. And then Rather Rip kind of brings it back to this sort of like dirty era, which is
so cool. Yeah, Birch, when we hung out late at night at your place, you did put on Murray Street. Was that because of middle age? Because
I'm middle aged now.
Is Murray Street a real blood and bone type thing?
Murray Street's fucking good. Okay, so I was kind of blown away by it.
Oh, sorry, heart and bone.
Oh,
the Paul Simon middle
age. No, it's very good.
Okay.
It just has very cool, introspective, like post-rocky kind of stuff. It has a disconnection notice, the empty page, Can Revisited, and like, it's great.
Kreisgau gave it an A. I'm not going to read the pretentious shit
he gave it an A. That's awesome.
He did say that with the help of their first real producer, they stopped flirting with progress and concentrate on remaining the world's greatest rock and roll band.
Wow.
Yeah. He came
the
around.
First real producer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess instead of like engineer, like somebody who. Okay. All right. Kreisgau.
I love how Kreisgau like came around on Sonic Youth.
Yep.
It's one of the. He like,
all it took was them talking shit about him. He's like, oh, yeah, I am a piece of shit. This is great. Yeah.
They grew, you know, and I think it. It's true. The early stuff, it feels a bit heavy-handed. It's Sonic Youth is definitely one of those bands where you're like, I don't know. These guys seem pretty artsy-fartsy to me, you know?
I mean, he was actively at the shows they were playing, too. Like, he right. saw the progression with his own eyeballs.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. But, you know, by the time they get to this, it's like, who cares? It's awesome.
Everybody should care.
Great guitar.
Amazing.
Yeah. Great playing. Interesting songs.
Yeah, I'm going to be listening to this album for the rest of my life.
2 or 3 years. Cool.
Robbie, son of a bitch.
I'm sorry.
Also in the...
I watched Final Destination.
In the music video for Dirty, Gordon plays a Yellow Fender bass guitar, which he borrowed from actor...
Keanu Reeves.
That's right.
The dog star himself.
Hot off of Point Break, baby.
He's your Jonathan Harker, baby.
Yeah. Last song on the album, Creme Brulee, was recorded when Gordon was randomly playing guitar and singing with Shelley playing the drums, while Moore was trying to turn on his amplifier and guitarist Lee Ronaldo was recording the whole thing.
Amazing.
That's how they got that.
I love Creme Brulee.
What do we think? All in the positive?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. Listen to this
100%.
Record. Yep. It's delightful.
Cool artwork as well. Mm-hmm. If you get the special edition, you can see some dirty pictures on the inside.
Ooh.
I won't spoil that for anyone.
I'm not going to.
It's Butch Vig.
No. Is it the hacky sacks butt?
It is. Bob. It's performance artists Bob Flanagan and Cherie Rose.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen the pictures, but they're defiling the stuffed toys.
Yes.
That's entertainment.
All right. Next time we'll be talking about Stereo MCs Connected. All right. Thanks, y'all. Fuck yeah, this song.
Mm-hmm.